And our focus this morning and for this next several weeks of summer is on this Sabbath commandment. We're going to be talking about keeping the Sabbath, series title, Not Your Grandma's Sabbath. And this morning I want to think about living from rest, living out of that Sabbath space. Now, my best friend called this week. She was very distressed by an encounter she was unintentionally a partner to. She was getting a ride home with a church friend and was invited in for a cup of coffee before going all the way home. And while visiting around the table, an esteemed church leader from her congregation joined them. And this esteemed church leader started venting about church business. And soon it wasn't just venting, it was name calling, calling some volunteers useless and the bottom of the barrel. And the church leader insinuated that many people's commitment to the church was subpar, their unavailability to do all the things that needed to be done was case in point, and he talked at length about all the ways that he contributed overtime to the church. He was there almost 24/7 doing this and that and this and that, and he was worn out to the bone. Clearly, he was grumpy, bitter, and vindictive, at least that afternoon at coffee. And it was painful for my friend to hear this esteemed leader spewing this stuff out about her fellow volunteers. Did it include her? And she started to feel a little disillusioned about the church. What? How could this be? How could someone speak this way? And in our conversation, and perhaps because I had been spending time reflecting on this command of the Sabbath, it occurred to me that this church leader was showing signs of being burnt out. He was emotionally exhausted, and emotional exhaustion is a symptom of burnout, and it manifests itself in anger, anxiety, and depression with tendencies to pessimism, cynicism, or detachment. And my friend confirmed that her church culture tends towards overwork. Volunteers and staff alike are expected to commit long hours for the work of the church, and there is always more to be done. But when work is not balanced with the gift of rest, then we can get like this esteemed church leader, bitter, vindictive, and not a mirror of Jesus' love. He was not able from that dry space to project a positive vision for the church. He lacked hope for the future. He was not able to live out a gospel of grace. He was living out of a well that was dry, out of anxiety, out of jealousy, bitterness. He had nothing left. And on my Facebook feed this week, I watched a video by an edgy Colorado preacher, Nadia Boltz-Weber, on the topic of having it all. I found her prophetic. And she declares that faith allows us to speak the truth about our lives, including the truth about this common idea: you can have it all. Nadia doesn't hear "you can have it all" as a word of liberation, but as an accusation. Several years ago, like many women her age, she was busy trying not to disappoint her work, not to disappoint her family, not to disappoint her friends, and in short, she was trying to prove that she could have it all. And it was important to her that nothing got dropped. Whatever limits and self-care she practiced was really so that she could overfunction. Until the day she seriously disappointed somebody she loved, and that someone said, "That sucks, that's terrible, but I forgive you." And she cried. She cried and she cried because suddenly she realized she didn't need to have it all. She needed to be set free. She needed to say someone to say to her, "Nadia, Nadia, let those plates drop." Because the fear of dropping the plates was torturing her. And in the end, it was far worse than dropping the plates themselves. And Nadia says, in reflecting on this, she says, "Faith is the thing that tells me that I am already enough. Faith tells me that I'm loved quite apart from anything I do or not do. Faith tells me that my worthiness is not in my busyness." We live in a culture of high expectations. We are expected to perform, achieve, and be available for work often 24/7. We invented the term 24/7. And life, particularly for those in the working years and the school years, can feel like a hamster wheel. We're crazy busy, we say. What an expression. Hey, crazy busy. And we seek work-life balance like the Holy Grail. But in general, we haven't found it. And this overwork is killing us. Stress-induced diseases are rampant. Mental health is at a crisis level. Children are reporting higher and higher levels of anxiety, younger and younger ages. Children are overscheduled, so that parents regularly hear indictments, "Let the children play," because the children hardly have time for free play. Even retirees are busy. When I talk to them, they're seeing the world, they're caring for grandkids, they're volunteering here and there. And not everything we're doing is bad. In fact, much of what we're trying to do is good in itself, but there's so much of it we're trying to do. So out of Sabbath, I ask the question, could we be trying to do too much? Could we be trying too hard? Could we be doing too much? Thomas Merton, an American monk who lived from 1914 to 1968, wrote this, which seems hauntingly current. He said, "There's a pervasive form of contemporary violence, and that is activism and overwork. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of its innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence. And the frenzy of our activism neutralizes our work for peace. It destroys our own inner capacity for peace. It destroys the fruitfulness of our own work because it kills the root of inner wisdom, which makes work fruitful." I read that and I say, wow. Overwork, overcommitting, this is violence. And Wayne Mueller wrote a book entitled Sabbath. And in his introduction, he comments on this quote by Thomas Merton, saying, "A successful life has become a violent enterprise. We make war on our own bodies, pushing them beyond their limits. War on our children, because we can't find enough time to be with them when they're hurt and afraid or need our company. War on our own spirit, because we are too preoccupied to listen to the quiet voices that seek to nourish and refresh us. War on our communities, because we're fearfully protecting what we have and don't feel safe enough to be kind and generous. War on the earth, because we cannot take the time to place our feet on the ground and allow it to feed us, to taste its blessings, to give thanks." This is the 21st century context in which we ponder the Sabbath. I strongly believe that we need the Sabbath more than ever before in our overworked, overwhelmed, overstressed, overscheduled society. Sabbath might even save our lives and the lives of our children, families, and churches. In our spinning, out of control, go, go, go culture, God speaks a command to his exhausted people. Remember the Sabbath day. Keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work. You, your son or daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them. But God rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. I believe keeping the Sabbath might be very well one of the most countercultural of all the Ten Commandments for our time. And yet within the church, I've discovered that this commandment in particular is subject to more naive dismissal or an uncomfortable shrug. Why? The prohibitions against murder, theft, adultery, lying still stand. But for the most part, we're just not sure what to do about this commandment about the Sabbath. Does it feel impossible or old-fashioned, just plain unworkable? But I believe we forget the Sabbath to our peril, and we risk living out of a foundation of overwork, stress, and anxiety, rather than out of a foundation of grace, trust, hope, and peace. When the church, when the people, let Sabbath keeping slip away, we risk losing a significant pillar of our God-given identity. We are at risk of forgetting who we are, or God's children. There's a Jewish proverb that states it's not Israel that kept the Sabbath, but the Sabbath that kept Israel. And Wayne Mueller comments, this is the only commandment that begins with the word remember, as it points to something we know, but we've forgotten. Remember the Sabbath. Remember who you are. Remember what you were made for. We were made for the goodness of creation, for delight, for wonder, for love and laughter. As Gandhi once said, there is much more to life than merely increasing its speed. In the Exodus account, the Sabbath is grounded in creation. For in 6 days, God labored and did all his work, but God rested on the seventh day. And Sabbath is the culmination of creation, the culmination of creation's goodness. In the Genesis account, the rested literally refers to the exhale breath. God exhaled. God breathed out a sigh of relief. Let's ponder for a moment the meaning of rest. Rest in this commandment is the opposite of work. On the Sabbath, we're commanded to cease from work and to embrace rest, not just for ourselves, but for all those within our circle of authority, our children, our employees, our pets, and our work animals. And the word for rest in Exodus 20, in contrast to Genesis, comes from the root word menuha, which means literally to sit down, take a load off, unburden yourself, put your feet up. But like the Hebrew word for peace, which is shalom, menuha has a broad range of meaning. And according to Dan Allender, menuha is better translated as joyous repose, tranquility, or delight. God doesn't rest in the sense of just taking a nap or chilling out. Instead, God celebrates and delights in his creation and calls it good. This meaning reflects deeply with the idea of shalom, or peace, menuha. Sabbath is a gift for God's people, a blessed gift, an exhale. We are given Sabbath so we can remember who we are, created by God and delighted by God. We are created to delight in God, to delight in each other, and delight in God's creation. We are created to live in peace and repose, in menuha. But Sabbath is a gift of limitation. In order to receive this rest, we need to honor our limits. Like many of God's other commandments, Sabbath sets limits in place of our human living, limits intended to protect what matters most in life, to honor our humanity. We don't murder, steal, or commit adultery, and we honor our parents because life is sacred and relationships are precious. Likewise, the Sabbath. We keep the Sabbath because limits on our work remind us of who we are and whose we are. We keep the Sabbath because we're not God. We need cycles of sleep and rest. We wear out. We get hungry, lonely, and we need to reset. When we take up God's invitation, commandment, to honor the Sabbath, what do we do with that time we're not working? I believe our forebears have made some errors in that department. More on that in a coming sermon. Because if we focus only on what we don't do, we miss the freedom inherent in the day. When we don't work, we're invited into an open space of grace. What's the opposite of work? Rest. Ask a child, what's the opposite of work? They're going to say, play. We're invited on the Sabbath rest, even into play, into celebration. Marva Dawn, in her influential book, Keeping the Sabbath Holy, speaks of embracing and feasting as significant elements of Sabbath keeping, embracing spacious time, embracing giving, embracing wholeness, truth, and beauty. And what emerges for you when you choose rest, might be different than what emerges for me. And it might be different Sabbath to Sabbath. Yes, worship emerges because our first priority in Sabbath is to worship our Creator. But out of worship flows the rest. Sometimes it might be a long nap. Sometimes it might look like a long walk, or a bike ride, or a phone call, or visit with a friend. Sometimes rest might look like board games with a group of kids, or a trip to Point Pelee, or a silent retreat. Sabbath rest might include reading the Bible or reading your novel. Rabbi Zalma says on the Sabbath, "Today I'm going to pamper my soul." And we're called to rest wholly, body, mind, spirit, and heart. We're called to rest. And as we rest, as we set aside our to-do lists for a portion of time, as we let go of the urgent, we make space for the important. To do that, we must remind ourselves we're not in charge of getting it all done. We're not in charge. God is. And we can and must release control back to God. God cares for us. God cares for our children. God is in control. And Waldemar Jansen, in his commentary on Exodus, says, "This is the paradox of grace, that the most important thing humans can do for God is to desist from trying to do anything. Let God be God, and don't try to step in God's place." But Waldemar Jansen reminds us that Sabbath keeping is not the same thing as leisure, which has at its heart self-gratification. If leisure is our goal, we'll continue to find emptiness. Sabbath keeping has God at its heart, at its core. And Sabbath keeping points us back to our created nature in God. It begins and ends in worship and will call us to our deepest selves and into deeper community with one another. And when we cease in our daily labor, other things like love, friendship, touch, singing, rest, they're born in the space created by that rest. And what is born? Let's remember what's born when we don't rest. I cited the statistics on burnout at the beginning. Bitterness, anger, violence, depression are some emotional elements. We risk stress-related physical and emotional and mental illness. We face increased loneliness. Our communities face more discord and division. We risk being like that church leader who so disillusioned my friend, who spoke out of contempt at his fellow church volunteers, failing out to live a gospel of grace. Believe overwork at its base is based in anxiety and fear, but that's another sermon for this series. I entitled this sermon, Living from Rest. And I once read an inspirational teaching called, a book called Teaching from Rest, by Sarah McKenzie. And she writes, "It doesn't matter if we have the most beautifully, carefully thought out plan if there isn't enough hours in the day to get it done. Look, if God expected you to get 36 hours of work done in a day, he'd have given you 36 hours to do it. But God didn't give us 36 hours a day. God gave us the Sabbath." And we're called to live out of that kind of rest. We're called to live out of a space where our limits are honored, where our work is set aside one day in seven, where we remind ourselves again and again that we are human and God is God. That Sabbath space and time can spill out of our approach to the rest of our lives. Do honor the Sabbath, I urge you. We can let the plates drop every once in a while. We're called to leave a little margin in our lives, to leave blank spaces that God can color in. I hope you can catch that vision. I pray that you can have Sabbath infuse every day of your week, pointing us always towards rest. For Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Let's pray. God of Sabbath rest, take our moments and our days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Help us to let go of our own self-importance, of what we think is so urgent and necessary every moment, to make space for what is your urgency and your necessary. Heal us from our busyness. Lead us beside quiet waters and restore our soul, that we may truly rest in you. Amen.